I'm going to talk mostly using examples of real people that OCAP works with every day to expand on what potentially has already talked about. The fact that this legislation that we're here discussing this evening is just an extrapolation of the way that the Immigration Act has worked for a very long time and the way that the Canadian state has operated for a very long time, with racial and economic discrimination coming down through its laws. And, you know, this is nothing new. After September 11th, there were 800 people who were arrested and detained in Canada in order to be questioned on the basis of suspected terrorist activity. We don't know how many of those people are still sitting in detention. Many of them have, we do know, been held in a jail in Toronto called the Metro West Detention Center. And those people, largely of Arabic descent, are being held, have been held in solitary confinement. And they're having their hearings taking place within their cells. When they go to meet their lawyers, when they finally do get access to legal counsel, they're strip searched on the way to and on the way from every single time. This eats into the amount of time that their lawyers are actually even able to meet with them. And we know that there have been deportations taking place straight out of those cells from inside of this jail in Toronto. Likewise, in the United States, after September 11th, there were more than 1,000 people picked up and detained on the grounds of investigation into alleged terrorist activity. And OCAP came into contact with what we know now as the only Canadian citizen, that we've been made aware of, detained in such a way in the U.S. Shakir Bloch's wife came to OCAP and also to comrades of ours in New York, letting us know that shortly after September 11th, her husband had disappeared. She hadn't heard from him in 6 weeks, had no idea where he was, and wanted, you know, action of some sort to be taken on this. She had no idea what to do. And OCAP wrote a letter to the Department of Foreign Affairs, you know, demanding that, as is their responsibility, they look into what was happening with a Canadian citizen in the United States. And as it turns out, the consulate hadn't acted on any of these sorts of queries until OCAP made the letter public. And within a day of this letter going public, the Canadian consulate went to the detention center in New York City where Shakir is being held and, you know, met with him, attempted to find out what was going on. He had been picked up about 10 days after September 11th and is actually still sitting in jail. So the Canadian consulate moved after this letter was made public, after the press picked up this story. But as things played out, the American government leaked another document saying Shakir had signed away his rights to consular intervention. Apparently the signature on this piece of paper is barely legible, but this document being made public then was supposed to, you know, waive the responsibility of the Canadian government and the Department of Foreign Affairs in this situation at all. So what has happened now is that Shakir actually has been charged, so he is now part of the criminal injustice system in the United States. He's still awaiting a full-fledged trial, and the Canadian consulate has once again backed off. The Canadian government has again backed off. They've done nothing to move this man out of what is a maximum security detention facility. Just to let people know, usually with immigration detainees, they're put into an immigration detention center. You're not put in shackles. You're not under 24-hour lights. You're not in solitary cells. You're certainly not taunted by American prison officials about your supposed connection with the bombings in New York City. And the Canadian government hasn't done anything to move him out of this facility, despite the fact that what he's being charged with is illegal entry into the U.S. And this is something that happens all the time. This is, you don't have the right paperwork. You went to find work. He was born in Pakistan. He's a doctor. He was seeking certification so he could practice medicine in North America. These kinds of border crossings happen all the time. But the Canadian government has, you know, taken its hands right off the situation. And another important factor and what we're really working to press on is they've done nothing to find out how many other Canadian citizens are jailed in this way. And that's clearly a responsibility of our government. To explain what OCAP is, it's an anti-poverty organization that's based in Toronto. It's been going for about 11 years, and for about four of those, we've been doing specifically immigration work. It's a combination of helping people deal with the legal tangles of filing refugee claims or humanitarian and compassionate claims, but we also tag team that with direct action. And we've worked with over 50 families in those 4 years and have met with an extremely high degree of success. And what our success is based on is it doesn't take that much to force an official in the immigration system to have to deal with this person, the claimant, as a person. So immigration, OCAP takes a group of people to whatever office, the enforcement center, the local immigration office, with a group of people, be they members of you know, various labor groups, be they people from the person's own community, and basically disrupt the workings of that office by being there with a large crowd of people and demand that we meet with a high-up official in whatever office we're at, and that they sit down with the person whose case we're working on and tell them to their face, listen, it doesn't matter that you may face torture if you return to your country of origin. It doesn't matter that you might have to decide whether or not to take your child with you back to the country or potentially be separated from your child. I have the power to make that decision, and I'm going to make that decision, and I'm looking you in the face and telling you that. And you would be amazed, or it's not amazing actually, that people have a really hard time dealing with that, you know, sense of personal responsibility, and that's the way that the system operates. You don't have to deal with people that are called illegals or people that are called refugee claimants as people. They're an ID number. They're, you know, a sometimes badly filed claim in the system. So OCAP turns that upside down and forces the bureaucracy to deal with people as people. One case that we worked on for quite some time was around a woman from Uganda. Her name was Sarah, and she has several Canadian-born kids and a husband who lives in Canada as a Canadian citizen. And Sarah came to us actually because we were at enforcement doing an action around someone else, and soon after her case came to our attention, a warrant was issued for her arrest, and immigration officials went to her door Saturday morning, 11 a.m., picked her up and put her in detention in the Celebrity Inn. The Celebrity Inn is a family detention center, actually right across the street from the airport, very conveniently located for nighttime removals of families. Very easy to put them on planes. Sarah was held there with her youngest daughter, who was about 9 months old at the time, and Celebrity Inn actually has an interesting policy. They don't provide anything for people who are in detention who are Canadian citizens. So if that's a 9-month-old baby, doesn't matter. No diapers, no food, no medical attention. As long as you're a Canadian citizen, you're not their responsibility. So in that situation, OCAP threatened to go to the press with this, and you know, the Celebrity Inn has a history of not meeting human rights standards for prisons, and they balked, obviously, at the threat of that, and dealt with the situation. But in Sarah's case, we then later on in her, you know, in her situation, took about 150 people with us to the enforcement center and demanded a meeting, like I was talking about. And you know, the results don't come right away. Immigration isn't going to capitulate the next day or a week later. It's something that, you know, doesn't look good. But Sarah today is landed, and she is going to be able to bring kids of hers that are living in Uganda to make up, you know, her family here in Canada and continue to build on that life that she started here. In terms of the way that C-36 and C-35 and 42 are coming down in terms of immigration, there's $49 million that's been allocated to enforcement, border patrols. There's $4 million going into building new, larger, longer-term detention facilities. One of the things that is extremely concerning is that in coming into Canada, immigration never used to have the power to detain people immediately at the border. And now, if they do not believe that you are carrying valid paperwork, if they believe that your documentation is false, under this new legislation, they have the ability to detain you and your family for an indeterminate amount of time. And, you know, imagine this scenario. You're coming from, as many people do, a country like Somalia with no established government, certainly no passport offices where you can go and, you know, apply for the right paperwork, and you're forced, because of the rules, to enter into Canada to get some kind of documentation. That is found to be not true, you end up in jail. So that's one of the, you know, a very serious change that's going to affect a lot of people. In terms of the sorts of things that OCAP has seen after September 11th, like I said before, it's a heightening of the economic and racist thuggery that the government has long practiced. Somebody was referring earlier to visa requirements becoming harmonized with the United States, and there has always been a huge flow of migrant workers coming into Canada. The IMF estimates that $70 billion is sent by migrant workers home to their families in other countries, and you compare that dollar figure to the amount of foreign aid that gets distributed around the world, and I can tell you that it far surpasses it. But we've worked with refugees from, or people that are called illegals from countries such as those where people are fleeing very difficult economic conditions. And those are the kinds of people that are already starting to feel this crackdown. A woman named Brenda that we're working with from Grenada, she had a scenario where immigration showed up at her door as well. And you're supposed to get written notification that immigration wants to remove you. And that paperwork was never sent to her. And the officials showed up. Finding Brenda not at home, they instead picked up her babysitter, a woman named Shirley Ann, who's been in Canada since she was 13. Shirley Ann was summarily arrested, detained, and within 10 days sent back to Grenada. So we're seeing a speed in terms of enforcement and, you know, the immigration procedure that we haven't seen before. And Brenda's situation is also a perfect example of the way that under immigration law, you're supposed to be entitled to have a humanitarian and compassionate claim heard. You present this claim, immigration is supposed to consider the details of your story and then make a decision. But what often happens and what's happening in her case is your deportation gets scheduled before they ever consider your HMC. So, you know, the wheels grind in such a way that your story never even comes before whatever immigration official who's going to have whatever biases he or she already has. You know, your date's scheduled long before that situation ever arises. Just to bring home the point that, you know, yes, there are serious changes that have happened after the attacks in New York, but these kinds of stories and this kind of discrimination has long been true. We worked a while back with an Afghani refugee named Aziz who came to Canada and spent 5 years going through security checks. He initially, upon arrival, had an interview with the RCMP that lasted 8 hours. And during that interview, the RCMP found no grounds to suspect him of anything, but took 5 years running him through, you know, the rigmarole of security checks. And OCAP, in his situation, took actions in Ottawa at the offices of CSIS and of high-up enforcement officials. And only years later, after Aziz did get his landing, after his son returned to Afghanistan to look for work and was never heard from again, only later did we hear from a lawyer in the community that the manager of the immigration office where Aziz's case was being heard had personally sped through Aziz's landing as a result of the disruptions at the offices, the enforcement and CSIS offices. So I guess if people want in the question period to ask me about our larger scale campaign, the things that OCAP has come to Montreal to meet with groups to talk about. We're forwarding a campaign that's based on three basic demands around disappearances and Afghani refugees. And people are going to be able to plug into this, you know, Vancouver, Ottawa, Montreal, Toronto. And if people want to ask questions about that, I'd welcome it. But I also want to remind you that as a result of this new cabinet shuffle, You've got the former Minister of Sport, Denis Coderre, who's now the new Minister of Immigration, sitting right in this city. And, you know, the only thing that's sort of been in the press about him so far is that he plays a mean game of golf. But the opportunity for action is on Montreal's doorstep. And we, OCAP is looking to fight with groups here and, you know, in cities across the country to make it clear that this is supposed to be a place where free flow of humans is as acceptable as the free flow of trade. You know, the war did not start 4 months, 5 months ago. The war started a long time ago.